Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone. Listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com, on a really now a beautiful, beautiful morning in tranquil upstate New York, in the teeth of the fall season. Really nice. I didn't yesterday we dove into action and I never even got a chance to give you details about the drive to Bennington and back. Tina's going today actually, and Scully got a hold of me yesterday. You'll see the relatedness to this. He said I can't come on Friday playing golf, and I think he said he was playing golf and taking in the foliage, and you know you can't have Keeneland without you know the obligatory foliage shots, it's just as pretty there as it is here. For whatever reason. And I don't know the science of. I know it has to do with you know how much rain there is and so forth, but the colors are so vibrant, and the same is true, you know. I guess you know throughout the, you know the Eastern Seaboard and out you know out in that direction, and so Scully said, well, we're gonna take in. I guess maybe he and Gigi, and I don't know who he's playing golf with, but I said to him right away, I said, I know exactly, completely concur. I understand why you're doing it, because it's too nice. And, you know, the one aspect, of course, with a day like today at Keeneland, and yesterday, we'll talk about it in a second, to not be able to take in the atmosphere, and you know, not that the spring at Keeneland, and don't you know, I'm not necessarily the right guy to talk about, but you know, of the times I go to Keeneland, you know, the spring is nice, but the fall is, you know, I think if people were surveyed, I think the fall would win in a, you know, by a significant margin. So we're taking it in virtually. And that topic, by the way, the virtual appreciation comes into focus today on a couple of topics. There is a for those that didn't notice, the information from NYTHA, from the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, they're having it was a significant piece of news yesterday out of New York, and there's a 11 a.m., for those of you that, if you haven't checked your email, came yesterday, there is a 11 a.m. webinar, you know, Zoom presentation for, you know, the New York horsemen and owners, and both Dave O'Rourke and Martin Panza are going to make presentations, and this goes hand in hand. We'll probably get Joe Applebaum tomorrow with the expanded details, but a very encouraging piece of news yesterday where the NYRA circuit is increasing purses across the board, most conditions, and this starts on Sunday, plus there's some retroactive payments going back to the beginning of the Belmont meet, and this is a two-pronged topic. You know, a lot of it is the outstanding handle numbers, and of course, through NYRA bets, significant contributions to the purse accounts, and then also the fact that Aqueduct has opened a little bit earlier than anticipated. There was speculation that during the summer, you know, when there were some adjustments and everybody had to kind of make do with, you know, where things were at the time, knowing that, you know, and hoping that, you know, there would be adjustments back up in the positive direction. Well, this is really particularly encouraging for horsemen and owners. Maiden specials, 63,000 up to 80, and state bred, 52,000 up to 70. And, you know, various, you know, the various levels for the various conditions, all really encouraging. And the presentation today at 11 is going to flesh out not just this, but, you know, what's coming up over the winter as well. So, you know, while everybody's been kind of treading water, this is a really positive development. And if you check your email, for those of you that didn't see this yesterday, and I think another one, a reminder or, you know, a link went out for you to register. You just have to register to join in, and then they send you a join-in link for 11 a.m., Dave O'Rourke and Martin Panza, all right? And this certainly met with and is going to meet with lots of warm reception across the board. Speaking of some other financial issues, Frank Angst is going to join us. Dick Powell joining us here shortly. And Frank is going to visit to provide the latest activity in Kentucky with the KHRC and racetracks petitioning the Kentucky Supreme Court about the HHR ruling. And I won't say much. I'll just let Frank discuss it, all right? And he'll explain what this motion, these filings, what they mean, and where it's going to go, ideally, to figure out what the court's ruling is going to mean long term with the HHR machinery. Tony later in hour two, of course, and we're going to, it's a topic that just is going to keep getting discussed. The crop rule in Kentucky, and Mike Smith with a proactive position, he sent a letter last week to CHRB and to state government regarding the, you know, the highly restrictive California rule and its application. And Tony, I know, read through it because he sent me a bunch of reactions to it. And it's really, it fits with a lot of the things we've been talking about, you know, starting with the, you know, the New Jersey whip rule that goes into effect next year. And so we'll get a little bit more on that. You just can't, you know, just doesn't, this is only going to continue. But Smith basically alerting regulators to, you know, the inappropriate or the, you know, uselessness of these restrictions when it comes to, you know, maintaining safety for the horses and the riders and for the bettors. And big props to Mike for acknowledging the bettors' position in this. If you haven't read his, you know, his piece, it's circulating all over the internet. Quite a bit of sale and breeding news, of course. They wrapped up that second session at OBS yesterday, and a six-figure seller, Donato Lanny, just is beating the bushes for nice horses, and he buys the session topper, $115,000 for a Dancing Candy colt that Lisa McGreevy's farm. Again, they've been seemingly a good couple of days for her, and that led the session. There were some more interesting names as you went through. I found this to be a pretty fascinating sale. And there's some, not only was there that Valiant Minister I brought up with Sid yesterday, but I found a few other stallions that were in that session that, you know, were somewhat news to me that, that are standing and have, first babies out there. And then there were also a couple just of, you know, the names that you do know and that you do know are standing that they didn't necessarily have huge price tags, but they sold well and they basically sold through. To me, that counts for a lot. If there's, when you see stallions, even if it's, you know, 10,000, 8,000, 12,000, 15,000, but if they sell through and if they don't RNA, kind of hints at something positive that you know, people are liking what they're seeing, and they want to take them home. So I'm sure we'll do more of that. And we got not next week, but last week of October, leading toward Breeders' Cup week, we've got the 4 days. Basic Tipton, October as well. As I mentioned yesterday when Sid and I talked about the stud fee announcement from Spendthrift, and by the way, Spendthrift yesterday also announcing that they had made a deal with the Robesons about Jackie's Warrior. And so when his career's over, he'll go to Spendthrift, FYI, and that's a It's a feather in the cap of McLean's music that he gets a son to stud, Jackie's Warrior. And, of course, it might not be for a couple of years yet, but if you didn't see that. Hill and Dale and reached out to John and hope to talk to John Sakura as early as tomorrow. And John laying out the fees for the Hill and Dale team, and John also, you know, had some really, you know, trying to encourage people and encourage breeders and the industry at large. We're aware of the pressures on the market due to the uncertain climate. Hill and Dale will once again look to be an industry leader by offering exceptional value in its stallion roster. We're all in this together, and together we'll grow stronger as an industry. Curlin, you're not getting any discounted Curlin cover fees, but there are some other notable fee trimmings. Kitten's Joy, 60,000 down from 75. Good Magic, 35 down to or 30 from 35. Cantheros stayed at 30. Violence stays at 25. McLean's Music, who's really emergent, 20. Midnight Loot, who's just rock solid, and World of Trouble, they stay at 15. Flintshire down to 10 from 15. Stormy Atlantic, the venerable Stormy Atlantic, 10. Army Mule, 7,500 from 10. Byron, 7,500 from 15. And Lost Treasure stays at 5. And similarly, Three Chimneys also. They Gunrunner, 50. from 70. Palace Malice, 20 from 25. Volatile will start his stud career at Three Chimneys. He's going to start out at 17.5. Sky Mesa, 12.5, et cetera. Fast Anna, 5,000 from 10. Will Take Charge, 5,000. The farms and they, they're responding to the market as kind of expected and anticipated. So there's some of the headlines. I wanted to get those in, and I do want to go over yesterday's results. A really fun day of racing. We'll save that for after Dick Powell, who is standing by. Dick, good morning.
Steve, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm good. Gorgeous. Just it's one of my favorite times of the year.
And it's supposed to warm up. It's supposed to be like 70, 75 or something.
Well, get out to the golf course while you still can.
Nah, I wish. I've given up the game. Actually, the game gave me up.
You don't choose to quit the game. The game tells you it's time to quit.
Yes.
I know the feeling. I am similar. I played for years, but when I moved to Montreal, that was it. It's the season is so short up there, and it's impossible to get tee times. I mean, they just. It's just crazy. You can't just like pick up and go and play. It made it very, very tough. And I don't know. I just sort of dwindled. I take the clubs out in the backyard now and then and just swing just to, for a little muscle memory.
Well, my grandson has taken it up. He's 14 and he's like a natural.
Nice.
It's like, wow, look at that swing. I know where he got it.
Nice.
But, he really enjoys it. So I've taken him to the driving range. His father has taken him to, various courses, things like that. And he's learning, hey, it's up and down. Some days you got it, some days you don't have it.
Not easy.
He likes it and is very good at it.
If you have the right temperament for it, it can be really, really satisfying. And if you're volatile, it might not be the right game for you. that's the bottom line on the linksmanship. So instead we play the horses, which at least there, if you're volatile, you have an outlet. You can throw some things, and nobody's gonna notice.
Yeah, and I was never volatile. My problem with golf is I start playing bad and I kind of like laugh. It's so pointless. Getting mad doesn't help. Bearing down helps, but then my temperament is fine for golf. I've gotten so arthritic over the years. My hands gripping the club. And I just stopped a couple of years ago. Now this year I miss it because. This year would have been a really nice year to go out and play golf with not much else to do and get out.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Once the course is opened, I mean, it's a scenario that lent itself well to, social distancing. It's easy to, other than I guess the person, if you're driving a cart, other than the person in the cart with you, other than that, you can easily stay. Stay separate. So I've seen I've seen everywhere we've gone, and in fact we've been through Dorset a bunch of times these last several weeks, and the Field Club, is one of the oldest golf clubs in the country, and it's been busy, Dorset Field Club. So, well, Dick, before we talk about the Hong Kong action, got to get a little international. Nick, by the way, Nick Luck is going to join us tomorrow. It's better for his schedule, and frankly, we got plenty of room for him tomorrow. So Nick tomorrow to talk about Ascot and Champions Day, but also, as Dick is going to do, reflect on Enable's career, some thoughts about her leaving the stage, another international superstar. And I saw a piece that seemed to indicate that Prince Khalid has more horses of a lifetime than anybody.
He really does, and it's just amazing what that homebred operation has been able to achieve. There was some chatter after the ARC that she might have a farewell race this coming Saturday at British Champions Day, but that's not going to happen. The ARC is her last race. It wasn't the storybook ending that everyone was rooting for, but she was game and courageous, and just the ground was just horrible. And the ground's supposed to be pretty bad this Saturday. They're already looking at heavy to soft and possible more rain. There were a lot of good stories in the Racing Post on trying to rate her, among ARC winners, among King George winners, things like that. And obviously she's right up near the top. And then some people had a super positive view. And there were some people that knocked her, one reason being her ratings were never as high as some of the other, see the stars and horses like that. But she just kept delivering and delivering, and Frankie added to the spice and magic to her, and she will be missed. That Breeders' Cup race with Magical coming through the stretch at Churchill and running, way out away from the rail, which was the place to be, get away from the rail. And she was great that day and has just what did she have, 12 group ones, I think, and just when she was good, she was real, real good. So that's it for her. Hopefully she'll have some babies. I see a Winx's first foal passed away.
Yeah, terrible.
So she had foal by Invincible. Was it I Am Invincible? Yeah, I think it was. Big stallion in Australia, and that was a shame. Similar age, she raced till she was six, just like Enable did, and just like One Master did, who won the Prix de la Ferret 3 years in a row, and she'll be in the Breeders' Cup for Gretchen and Roy Jackson. Still doing great at the age of six. So, we've had Zenyatta, we've had horses that when they're carefully managed, they can keep going, especially when you have ownership like Judmont, who was willing to bring her back this year, and it was just very enjoyable to have her. And like I say, just wasn't the fairy tale ending that everyone was hoping for.
Well, you can't write that script. People were holding out a little bit of hope that maybe they, maybe she would come and finish up in the Breeders' Cup, but it wasn't, wasn't a surprise at all. So, it's amazing how, there's been just a parade of Judmont greats, and they're liberally distributed European campaigns and North American, and the piece that I saw, linked her and Frankel and Arrogate and Dancing Brave specifically as horses of a lifetime. But there's, I'm sure that aside from these, everybody's got certain stars from the Judmont galaxy that. That really stay with them, that are their favorite. They're not necessarily even, the ones that are, the most obvious.
Yeah, and recently Kingman was a great racehorse for them, and sure. Now it's an even better sire, and I think she's going to be bred to Kingman.
Yeah, that's what they said.
Pedigree wise, that works out. So they don't have to. They don't have to pay a stud fee. They just breed their own mares to their own stallions and just keep getting top horses out of that program. It's amazing when you look up any Judmont horse. Oh, let's look at the pedigree. Like the pedigree goes on for pages. Black type. After this, after that, folded this. It's remarkable what they've done. And one thing they do is they do cull their herd. They get rid of a lot of those mares. They seem to know which ones to get rid of and which ones to keep, but they keep their numbers manageable. And it's an amazing operation. You can't say enough good things about what they've achieved racing and breeding.
A couple of the ones that stand out. I mean, Honest Lady, I've talked about a million times, and Sightseek certainly.
Yes.
Intercontinental. I was a big fan of.
Thanks, Hill. That whole family.
Yep. There you go.
Crazy.
There you go.
Crazy family with one grade one winner, group one winner after another coming out of there. And I needed Dan Silly in the Breeders' Cup Mile at Churchill. 2000. And he ran great. He just didn't get the trip. Johnny rode him. And he just got, you know, 14 horse field. He never got clear, but he was full of run all through the stretch, and he's turned into a tremendous sire. And they've had sprinters over the years that have done great, and you don't hear that much about them. But yeah, First Defense, spelt the British way. And I love those silks.
Silks are great.
So cool.
Yeah, they are.
You know,
they really are.
They're so recognizable and distinguishable.
I'll give you one that we can appreciate, certainly, although she didn't have a long career, but Flute on the main track, away from the turf. What about, and it's funny, she's kind of a horse, my horse the time forgot scenario. You don't hear her name brought up as often. I suppose it's because, you know, she finished her season unsuccessfully, that great three-year-old campaign. But, you know, when she started facing elders at the end of the year and the Beldame and the Distaff, but she was as good a three-year-old filly that, you know, of recent vintage.
Yeah, and they've done so well with their fillies, and then obviously as broodmares and things like that. But then when they bought Arrogate, they intentionally were looking to buy American Dirt horses.
Yep, we've talked about that.
They come up with him, unfortunately. Passed away way too soon, and you know, get like 2-3 crops to race out of him while he was here. But yeah, that was part of their plan, that they wanted an American Dirt type sire, and bought yearlings, turned them over to the American Dirt trainer Bob, and just did sensational.
I watched you with
it.
Well, as part of that. You know, that horse of a lifetime piece, they had links to video, and I hadn't watched the Arrogate World Cup race in a while, and I watched that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's unbelievable.
You know, he got left, and he won, but just watch him go by Gunrunner. It's insane. Gunrunner was a sensational horse, and Arrogate goes by him at the eighth pole. It wasn't even that he needed the entire mile and a quarter to catch him.
Now we'll get some perspective tomorrow from Nick Luck as well. Anything about Champions Day to impart, Dick, before we talk Hong Kong?
No, I looked at the entries a little bit. The ground was supposed to be a problem, so we'll see. I would think that, with a couple of exceptions, these are not really superstar-led type races. And I think with the ground being as heavy and it's going to be, I would think, don't hesitate if you see anything at a price. Don't hesitate to take a shot, because it could be just, you know, a slog, as they like to say. And also Friday night, early Saturday morning, we have the Caulfield Cup, which Aidan O'Brien has already shipped down to Australia. And he has Anthony Van Dyke, who was not able to run in New York because of this contaminated feed issue. So he popped on a plane, and he's shown up at the Caulfield Cup. I assume he's maybe running in the Melbourne Cup, although he has a couple others in the Melbourne Cup. But the Caulfield Cup looks like it's a great race in and of itself, but it's you're going to see a lot of these horses come back in the Melbourne Cup. So it's a $5 million race. And some Europeans, defending champion, and lots of recognizable names, lots of horses you need to learn if you're going to play the Melbourne Cup coming up, which isn't that far away. That's what's scary now. How we still haven't run the Cox Plate. You know, we have the Caulfield Club, then we have the Cox Plate, and we have the Melbourne Cup. So they're coming fast and furious.
Well, and there's a the Frankel gelding in there in the Caulfield Cup. It's also I saw the barrier draw for the Everest as well.
What did Santa Ana Lane draw?
I think the seven or the eight.
That's good. That's good.
Well, we needed him last year in the charity contest.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, I'll be rooting for Bivouac, James Cummings, young trainer, grandson of Bart Cummings, and he's doing great with the Godolphin horses. He's had not bad luck in the race, but he's been close, and see if he can push this one over. But yeah, that race is. You know, they took an idea from the Pegasus over here, and I think they made it better. They have no shortage of horses. I mean, no shortage. They could run 40 horses if they had room. And the spots that they have are very valuable. They do get traded. And I love the distance. You know, 6 furlongs, yeah. Just sprint. Great. You don't need, if it's a mile and a quarter, you're not going to have that full field. And Australia obviously has lots of sprinters. So, yeah, that'll be good. Same horse won it 2 runnings in a row, so I don't think he's back. But many of the others have tried it before. And that right-hand turn, and you don't want to be too far out because you're just losing ground most of the trip, but then you don't want to be too far in. If you could just buried without anywhere to run. So I'd say 7 or 8 is where you want to be.
Yeah, I'm just pulling it up, too. It's actually a little bit further inside. He's the 8. He's in the 8. He's in the 8. He's wearing number 4. And he's the barrier draw, he got the 8. And that of course, is at Randwick and the Caulfield Cup. And in fact, I'll get the times, too. And you know what? Maybe we should probably get a hold of, not only will we have Nick Luck, I'm going to get a hold. We'll do a little Australian, make a note. So it'll be a little nice international flavor tomorrow. Andrew Hawkins. See if we can't get Andrew. Sometimes it's tough with the phone, but I'm going to try to get Andrew on tomorrow with both of those races and big cards too, nice cards. So let's talk, let's merge this in, and obviously the late night action, the people can, you know, kind of a quiet North American weekend as we get a little bit of a, you know, a little bit next 2-3 weekends before Breeders' Cup, start to, you know, kind of tread water a little bit as the fields form, get some Hong Kong review, and then look forward to late night Saturday.
Oh, last Sunday, Sha Tin was very fast. Times were excellent. 7 out of the 10 races were fast, and then standard. The other three were right on it. Mighty Valor won race 3. And he was very good. Time was terrific. He's a class 4. I don't think he's going to be in that class for very long. He looked very progressive. And then Tony Cruz won the class 2 feature race, the last race of the night, with California Rad. Matthew Chadwick rode for him. I guess they used to be a hot combination a couple of years ago. And They got back together again, pulled down a big purse. Riding star that day, Wagner Borges, who was actually from Brazil. Vincent Ho, Matthew Chadwick all had two wins on the card. And we had 3 out of 10 favorites win at Sha Tin that night. So now action went to Happy Valley yesterday. The big star was Jerry Chow, 10-pound apprentice rider, wins 3 on the card, and he could have won 4. Karis Teton got up from a wide draw to win one of the later races in the morning. But Jerry Chow wins 3. He's, you know, like I said, he gets 10 pounds off. He's going to have the 10 pounds off for 6 more wins, and then he'll go to 7. He's part of that Hong Kong jockey school where they get young riders, they prep them, then they send them around the world. Jerry Chow wound up in South Africa. He won like 70 races down there. So these are not beginner riders. These are just young kids. I shouldn't call them kids, but they're young people that have gotten a lot of experience, a lot of training. Now they're ready for the Hong Kong scene, and he's doing extremely well. He had 2 wins for Tony Cruz out of his 3 winners. So that was good to see. So when you see in the form guide, if you see 133 with Jerry Chow, he's really carrying 123. Once he gets 6 more wins, he'll get a 7-pound apprentice allowance. Yesterday, surprisingly, for Happy Valley, no Zach. Zach usually cleans up at Happy Valley. He did not have any. Joe only had 1. Both of them have been kind of cool after Joe got off to the big starts and Zach kind of caught up a little bit, but they've both been a little cool, 1 winner or no winners in Zach's situation the last few times. So Justin leads at 21, Zach 16, Karis Teton 13, Vincent Ho 11, the trainers, Casper Found says 14, 7 at Happy Valley, 7 at Sha Tin. And the dichotomy, for want of a better word, between the two courses continues. Happy Valley's had 8 favorites out of 40 races win, 20% strike race. Sha Tin has come down some. 24 favorites out of 70 races, 34% strike rate. So we see a 14% differential between races at Sha Tin and races at Happy Valley in terms of the favorite winning overall for the whole Hong Kong season this year. The strike rate is now down to 29%, which it'll most likely hover around for the rest of the year. So that's back to par. The Happy Valley one is a little bit below par. I think last year's meet was 24% at Happy Valley. So that's always something to keep an eye on. This Saturday, we have 2 Group 2 handicaps, not regular stake races, handicaps. The Premier Bowl handicap is a Grade 2, Group 2, going 1,200 meters, 6 furlongs. It only got a field of 7, unfortunately. But it has some interesting horses, Hot King Prawn, some of the usual suspects we get over there with the sprinters. Computer Patch is coming off a huge race, but it was going the straight 6, the 5 furlongs at Sha Tin, and now he draws outside of the others. So I don't know if he can repeat that effort as much as he's improving. I'm going to throw a crazy long shot in there. Number 7, Perfect Match, Danny Shum, Alexi Bedell, in good form. Had a nice win the first opening day, in fact, and just looks like he can compete with this level and getting the major weight concession. We'll see if he can pull off a bit of a shocker against highly regarded horses. But at 117 pounds, why not? We'll take a shot. And then the 7th race is the Oriental Watch Sha Tin Trophy Handicap. This is the metric mile, 1,600 meters, Beauty Generation, Golden 60. They're all back against each other. Unfortunately, it's still a handicap, and Beauty Generation gets no break. He's still the high weight because he's the highest-rated horse, so he's 133 pounds. Golden 60 only picks up 7 pounds off that dominant win last time out when he beat Beauty Generation. So still going to be tough for Beauty Generation until they get full weight for ages. But he does draw better than he did the last time. Last time, Beauty Generation drew to rail. Now he draws to 5. Golden 60 draws to 6. And just he's won 11 out of 12 starts, won Hong Kong's version of their Triple Crown for 4-year-olds. Just a super horse, and he could not have been more impressive last time out. All that said, you want a price, number 8, Champion's Way, from John Size and Joe Maria. Now, these are premier connections. They draw well. Good second last time out, and that was second start off the layoff. When you look at this field, Steve, 6 of these horses are making their second start off the layoff. 5 of them are making their first start off the layoff. And Champion's Way is making his third start off the layoff. So he's had 2 runs, 1 going 6 furlongs, 1 going 7 furlongs. He finished second in that dead heat with Beauty Generation. And I think, once again, with 114 pounds, Champion's Way can be right in there. And it's a bigger field today. It should be a more true run race. I think Champion's Way, the price, could be what they like to call an each-way horse, you know, win place. But he only has to finish in the top 3 to cash that place bet. And as always, Saturday afternoon, check your odds, see what Champion's Way is in the place pool, see what his price looks like it's going to be. And if he's anywhere around 7-8 to 1, I would definitely jump on him. But it would be interesting to see if BB Generation, can he bounce back and Golden 60 continue with this tremendous run that he's been on as we head into the Longines International races coming up in December.
That's right.
These are all hats on the road to those big races coming up.
Well, 12:45 a.m. Sunday. And Saturday, you know, late night Saturday, West Coast, of course, you get late night for you, and for us, early morning. And the Chatin Trophy and the Premier Bowl. And, you know, we've had, you know, last week, haven't had the fireworks, not the fireworks that we had 2 weeks ago, but in fact, just looking, Dick, the biggest price was, you know, it was $24.90. Yeah.
Well, yesterday the biggest price was $40. Yes, Sunday was $24.90 with Kai Ying Master. Yeah. Yesterday we had in fact it was a Jerry Chow, Tony Cruz won, a Bullish Brother, in race number 3, paid 20 to 1.
Nice.
Only one favorite was able to get it done, and it was Jerry Chow for Tony Cruz on Buddies, and Buddies is sired by one of my all-time favorite horses, So You Think. And So You Think produces some speedy horses. He's a galloper, and his horses do great in mile and a quarter races in Australia, but he has some in Hong Kong, and Buddies is basically has gotten his rating up to where he will be in stake races coming up. This was a class 2, and he's already rated high. After this win, he'll be increased in rating, so look for Buddies coming up as the waters get deeper.
Well, some outstanding international activity between Hong Kong and Australia, and if we look ahead to next week, Happy Valley, again, at 7:15 Eastern on Wednesday morning, looking ahead to next week. So we're back into a nice regular Happy Valley Chatin alternate after starting the month with a couple of Chatin meetings.
And we do have 2 all-weather races on Saturday night, Sunday morning at Chatin. So we have 8 turfs, 2 on the all-weather, and a couple of nice stake races.
Excellent. Excellent. Dick, I appreciate it, and looking forward to inching closer to Breeders' Cup 2, and we'll start assembling. I every morning I go through and I have to update my lists, and took a couple off the last couple of mornings and added a couple. Kamiko committing to Breeders' Cup, certainly notable.
But we're not going to get Love. We're not going to get
That's right.
But that's really a shame, because she's she's an absolute monster. And Gosden had his doubts about running against her with the Nabel. She's that good. But they've had crazy interruptions and
very
ground
much.
Issues, stuff like that. So she's been put away for next year.
Well, we'll put things away for next week with Dick Powell joining us. Hong Kong Jockey Club, everybody. Dick, have a great weekend, and we'll talk next week.
Okay, Steve, thanks.
I appreciate it. Dick Powell, everybody, and we'll stay right here. We're going to get a visit in with Frank Angst from the Blood Horse. And while we do that, let me start to add in some of the results from from the Wednesday cards. And I don't know if you saw my tweet last night after Mike Trombetta had won that Jersey Shore at the end of the card yesterday at Monmouth. And, Premier Star was no surprise by any means, but that wasn't really the point of the tweet. And I gotta go pull it up so that I get all the details. Amazingly, that is the eighth racetrack that Trombetta has won a stake this year. He's won 12 stakes, and he's done it at eight different venues. I mean, which is crazy, actually, when you think about it. He's won at all three NYRA tracks early in the year with Independence Hall at Aqueduct. He had Wet the Whistle the other day at Belmont, and, of course, Saratoga. I'm just top of the head on these three with Win-Win-Win in the forego. So all three racetracks. Woodbine, he's been very successful the last few seasons. He won that stake. He won the Deb last week at Presque Isle. Of course, he had a nice weekend at Pimlico with two stake wins, and he's won a stake or two at Laurel. And of course, this was Monmouth. So he's won at Monmouth, Laurel, Pimlico, Saratoga, Belmont, Aqueduct, Woodbine, and Presque Isle. I don't. You could go. I mean, there's plenty of outfits that ship around and participate in stakes programs up and down the Eastern Seaboard, but I don't know if I've ever really noticed that to such an extent. 12 stake wins at eight racetracks. So good job, Mike. Sonata Stable with the Tapitcher Colt, Premier Star, and last seen in the Amsterdam, and certainly I haven't seen a fig, but he's been running in the 90s. That was a nice. There were some nice races actually yesterday at Monmouth, as I told you. And that maiden race, by the way, Louis Carvajal has got horses for the Generazios, and another one of their homebreds. Unbelievable! This one, a Handsome Mike, 'tis Handsome, 2-year-old maiden winner. And Tiz Handsome with Chris DiCarlo in that maiden third, and a bit of an upset too. I mean, 8-1 paid $1,880. Beat Subsidize for Chad and Seth Klarman, and there was one other maiden win that caught my eye. These were older horses, 3 and ups. Kelly Breen. And at some point, we misconnected with Kelly, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. But when Firenze won, he wins and actually runs 1-2 in this sixth race yesterday at Monmouth. And I kind of wandered into it by accident. But Full Impact, the first-time starter, a Street Sense colt, out of an Even the Score mare, bred by the Beckers, Barry and Judy Becker. He runs 1-2 for Gary and Mary West because Malibu Star, who was the 3-2 favorite, ends up second in here. And, Kelly Breen, who was basically, privately training for George Hall. And then when Hall kind of shifted his operation, he kind of opened the door for Kelly to go out and you know, take on various clients. And Kelly Breen has really done a nice job, you know, kind of refashioning and becoming a – we talked about it at the time when he was going to become a, you know, a public stable again. And he's done very, very well. So he did winning Jersey and in New York. I'll get to the Indiana and Keeneland results in a little bit. But right now, standing by Frank Angst. And it's been too long since we last talked to Frank. Frank, good morning.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Heard you taking some value out of one of my angles there. I've had a high opinion of Mike Trombetta shippers for a long time, so that's always it's not entirely it's very impressive, but not entirely surprising that he's put together a run like that all over the several tracks there.
And he, you know, he's got the barn at Fair Hill, which
yeah.
gives him some option in terms of training method, and it is very notable how often he's gone up to Presque with horses and up to Woodbine, and
yeah.
He's done a really good job, you know, kind of tailoring surface to the stock, and it's been I'm delighted for
yeah,
Mike
Trombetta's
success.
That.
Yeah, but this was I don't think I've ever really I suppose I should look at you know, it's just that so many people are, you know, are not confined to a circuit, but I mean, to go to all these different venues.
He gets that prize as a trainer, and then the horse that gets that prize for this year is Swiss Skydiver, who's just absolutely incredible. He's gone all over the country and has won everywhere or run very well everywhere.
Exactly, nine different venues. Well, we certainly looking forward toward Breeders' Cup, and I suppose I will see you in a few weeks. I didn't see you Derby week, did I?
It's that kind of year, isn't it? I was there for Friday and Saturday, but you know, usually I'm usually in Louisville for maybe 9 of 10 days through to Derby. But that wasn't set up that way this year.
No, it was unusual. Al, it'll be easier to run into you at Keeneland. Let's take a few minutes, Frank, and I'll hit a couple other topics since we're together. But I saw your piece yesterday about the filings, the KHRC and the racetracks, Ellis and Keeneland and Kentucky Downs, regarding the story with the state Supreme Court. Where do things stand, and where are they headed? When it happened, when the court had its ruling, we talked to Milt Toby about the legalities. What's gone on since then, and what did this mean yesterday?
I mean, that's one of the options that the Kentucky Supreme Court offers is a chance to petition for a rehearing for specific reasons, but the case does fall into those reasons. And what they're trying to make the point of is that it's already legally been determined that these games are parimutuel in nature, and they want to re-argue. They think that the court was mistaken when it made its previous decision in September. So that two of the big things that the court based that decision on was that they're saying, you know, the wagering needs to be on basically like a single event. On the other side, you said, hey, you know, we already have pick sixes and pick six carryovers and pick five carryovers. And more specifically to the case, is it's not written that way in Kentucky administrative regulations. So, you know, they kind of, in the opinion of the racing industry, they kind of made their own law there, and they want to re-argue that. And then the other point was the seed money You know, that would be in case, you know, just like they seed the pools in a pick six sometimes. If you're the one that hit it on the first day, you don't want to win $1,000. So just like the same idea, it's still parimutuel, but they seed the pools in the historic racing in case you hit some long shot combination and the pool hasn't built up yet. They point out that that's allowed under Kentucky parimutuel law because that seed money, you're not betting against the house. That seed money goes in there as a way in case that somebody hits something early before the pool is built up. But you're not betting against the house because that's going to go to somebody. And it's going to be based on the parimutuel angle. So, I mean, it's absolutely critical that Kentucky either wins this case or somehow finds another way to keep historical gaming going. If the Kentucky Supreme Court first of all, they have to agree to the rehearing. If they agree to that and then hear it again, it would be important to win that case, obviously. Beyond that, if those channels don't play out, then you're kind of left with two options. One is, can you change the game's technology to meet the standards of the court?
Yes.
Encore Racing, which that was the game that was looked at in this case, and they're at Keeneland, Kentucky Downs, Ellis Park. They've already said that they can do that. So they're confident they can meet that standard. And then, to me, the best option would be for the lawmakers to do their job and go ahead and make this specifically legal. Obviously, Kentucky has gone decades seeking casino gaming, really all of those plans when they've come up would benefit racing. They found ways to benefit racing. That's never happened. So to address that, the racing industry said, hey, this is something that meets the standards of our state law, and we'll put it in place. And the Racing Commission put it in place. And, you know, for as many times as I've written stories that either maybe not they're not necessarily opinion pieces, but they might bring up news stories that might call into question things that different regulators across the country have done. You really have to give the Racing Commission credit here because they really worked to find a way to find something that would benefit the industry. And then they fought for it. They have fought for this law, the rules that protect this gaming, they've fought for it for a decade now, and they're continuing that fight. And the tracks have too. But you know, I think it's really important to credit the Racing Commission for what they've done. I mean, it's critical. So anyway, that the lawmakers, while they haven't put casino gaming in place, this is something that's already there. And I think if the industry points out, hey, this is already there, and it's working for Kentucky, and it's working for the industry, and it's generating money for the state, are you willing to just see that go away? So maybe there can be some opportunity there when that comes up in the next session. But yeah, it's concerning, that's for sure. I mean, these games are generating $1 million a week for horse racing purses. By my study, $53 million a year in the most recent fiscal year. So the purses have doubled in Kentucky in like 8 years. So this is important.
Well, and even at the time, you know, when I had the conversation with Milt, it was very interesting wording when the court, its finding and its press release, where you could really sense they were apologetic about the ruling, and they,
yeah,
it was very unusual terminology to say, you know, we acknowledge and are, you know, acutely aware of what this means, you know, to the financial wherewithal of you know, of the Commonwealth. I thought that was notable, and you know, you mentioned the technology aspect and what Encore Racing is doing. I had also seen, and I haven't seen any follow-up regarding Exacta Systems, because they said as well that they could set the algorithms for the machinery to meet the court criteria.
Yeah, and they're one and the same, Encore and Exacta
okay.
Systems. They changed the name somewhere okay. over the years, so I probably should be more careful about that, but they are largely interchangeable. Now, to Churchill Downs' credit, I like the position they've taken. They are trying to keep this decision as narrow as possible. So all along they have said, whatever decision you make on this, it doesn't apply to our Ainsworth games. They want to continue to have that option to make the argument. Now, I mean, if the Supreme Court doesn't do this rehearing and says, you know, this is our opinion and we're sticking to it, I think that is going to put some pressure on the Racing Commission. Obviously, they can't go against what's viewed as state law. So we'll see how that plays out. I mean, you're getting really deep into legal matters there that I think it would be some pressure on them that they can't go against what the rule of the land is, for sure.
In the meantime, what kind of timetable is there, Frank? I mean, I know
that's a detail I didn't have in my story. I'm going to have to talk with some people on the time frame on
okay.
when they will decide if they're going to do this rehearing. That is a good detail I need to get.
Well, and because of course, you know, the Bible thumping loons were screaming that, you know, the building should be shuttered 8 minutes after the ruling.
I mean, obviously they're going to say what they want to say, but the court had kicked it back to the lower court to
right.
carry out the decision, and that's also up for argument in the rehearing request. That they put in yesterday, they said, you know, you sent this back to the lower court with the stipulation that they now view this as not parimutuel. We also think that should be re-argued in the lower court, so we'll see how that goes. That's another request that they made in their rehearing petition.
Well, this is obviously, you know, going to be monitored. I won't declare it problematic, you know, until it is, I guess.
Kentucky Racing Circuit would face real challenges. But yeah, maybe we should just wait and see how it plays out before we speculate. I think it would be difficult for Kentucky to continue a year-round circuit if historical gaming is no more. But let's hope it doesn't come to that.
It doesn't. The whole thing is preposterous, frankly. I mean, it's.
So much effort was put in to come up with an idea that meets the state standards in terms of laws and administrative regulations, and then it delivers everything that it said it would. You know, there's commitment to this, and it's delivering jobs, and it's allowed racing to compete as in a state that's surrounded by casino states now, Indiana, West Virginia, Ohio. I mean, it's to the south is we're not as bad, although even Tennessee has approved sports wagering, which Kentucky hasn't done that yet. That was twice now. It's looked like that was moving forward, because I know not everybody thinks this way, but I think sports wagering can benefit tracks. I think it's very much the same type of player, and it's a chance for tracks to bring in some new players, and I think we've seen that in the pandemic play out when these sports wagers were displaced. Some of the ADWs did a really good job of saying, hey, racing's still going, and here's how you do it.
Now, with the variety of facilities that have been either built new or refreshed, and of course the the tearing down of Turfway in in advance of a new facility there, the Corbin project, the in eastern in southeastern Kentucky, the Oak
Oak Grove,
and everything else with the renovations, Red Mile, the Spectrum, and what's gone on, there in Louisville. It doesn't make any sense. This whole thing is just idiotic.
It's my line on historical horse racing gaming has always been that it's just big enough that it benefits the sport. I think New York's done a great job with the casino money, but and others would mine, and that's been a battle back and forth. But in some states, I do think the casino gaming just overwhelms the racing product, and when they're owned by one and the same, sometimes that commitment's not made to racing, unfortunately. But historic gaming, they almost have to work hand in hand, and it's been very good like that. The commitment has to be there to improve facilities, improve purses, and it's really worked for Kentucky.
Now, I appreciate the opportunity, Frank, to have you, kind of fill in the blanks, because it was a fairly technical fairly technical elements, and I don't know if people saw the saw the headlines and saw the the specifics. So I thought I'd reach out to you, and you did mention the handle elements and what's gone on, and last week you did as you and Matt Hegarty do, and the reporting on the handle numbers, and literally in less than an hour in New York they've got a teleconference, a webinar for members of NYTHA, the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association owners and trainers, with a significant purse boost, getting things back toward pre-pandemic levels. And it's funny, there was also, I'm just kind of throwing this at you. The piece too, either yesterday, I think I read it, I can't remember if I read it early this morning or early yesterday morning, but or yesterday afternoon, there was a piece about the TV ratings, and there was some across the board in sports, the viewership numbers are down, and of course everybody with their specific agendas trying to tie that to their their specific the ox that they want to gore.
In reality,
if you saw this piece, and I'll send out the link to it. I think it's a Yahoo. I think it was on Yahoo Sports, and apparently some polling numbers indicate that it has nothing to do with all the suggestions that people are trying to make about why why there's viewership down. But in the meantime, the numbers that Fox announced, mid-pandemic, in terms of the viewership they were getting on Fox's Day at the Races and America's Day at the Races and Saratoga Live, were just astronomical. What's now that the dust is sort of settled and there's other things to watch, and some things are open a little bit more, what's your pulse read, Frank, on what has been either accomplished or what positives have come out?
I really feel like the industry has an opportunity this year to see what has happened and see some reason to maybe think of some things in different ways. One thing I want to say before I forget, I mean, just how good are the TV productions that this sport has? I mean, just when all the other sports went away, just that the daily NYRA broadcast and the team that's on there, I mean, they just did an incredible job. I don't watch TVG as much, just I have to kind of work harder to get it, but yeah. I know there's a lot of talented people there, and they've been doing it for years, and it's such a huge commitment. So just having that in place was just so big for the industry at the right time. But I think the fact that the handle numbers, so the number of races are way down, but the handle hasn't declined a whole lot. I mean, it's almost a wash. And I think that's telling that, you know, that the sport, we don't have to, not every track has to run year-round. Like, and I know like the, how rarely this works out, but if there can be some level of cooperation, I know the Mid-Atlantic has addressed this on some levels, but it does seem like, you know, there's a chance there that the numbers kind of back up that people will support what's available, and a lot of smaller tracks did a great job this year of moving their signals to Monday and Tuesday, running maybe from 5 to 8 or 5 to 9. You know, for years I've always thought there was an opportunity for a track in the Eastern time zone to start at like 10 in the morning. You know, when people want to, no one else is racing then. So I just think there's some ideas to look at, some opportunity here to look at scheduling, because when our hand was forced, the industry delivered. So I don't see a reason not to build on that. I do think the sport has brought in some new fans. Knowing that the other sports were gone and that the handle didn't totally go down, I don't think that was all people that have just been betting the sport all along. I think some new people came over and made that possible. So to continue to market to them would be really big, and keep them in front of racing. I think the sports wagering and the horse racing can continue to build together too. So hopefully there's some opportunity there.
You mentioned the morning hours, and it was Eric Hallstrom at Indiana that swung into action with some of the, you know, the international scheduling that was, yeah, you know, Royal Ascot and the
that
light.
That was one of the tracks I was thinking of when I was crediting. Yeah, for sure.
Well, the meet's got another 6 weeks, and the numbers, I mean, I'm playing Indiana now regularly, and their numbers are going to be remarkable. I mean, they're handling $2 million every day now, and it, you know, the value in this late pick five has been spectacular, and, you know, Eric running a quarter horse cards in the morning hours when when Ascot and the like are running, it was very, yeah, clever and innovative, and, you know, I think 700,000-800,000 in handle on cards that would normally do, you know, less, you know, much less than that, and so there are signs of life. I mean, and you know, the aggressive pricing, whether it's, you know, they've got the 11.99% takeout, and you know, Canterbury kind of stole the thunder a little bit this summer with their 10% takeout pick five. But I mean, it does feel like racing departments and marketing departments are, you know, recognizing that the product's got to be priced better, the problem we've got to a degree is, if we're going to attract new players, it has to be with a product that's attractive, and it can't be a product that is in their pocket, so aggressively that it just, that they don't have a chance. And you know, that's been the issue. I mean, and that's why, yeah, players have, you know, that's why we've, you know, lost a certain percentage of players that just, you know, they can't keep the ball in the air because we've got a takeout structure that, you know, on a wider basis. Yes, there's, you know, if you shop, if you're a value shopper, I mean, you can pick places to play, and you don't have to, you know, you can avoid onerous takeout scenarios.
And I haven't done a story on this. This is more just based on my own experience as a very small-time horse player. But I feel like there's better deals on the ADWs now, and I suspect it's a competition among the ADWs, but also they're also now competing with the sports wagering apps. And I feel like there's been a lot of good deals. I mean, just some stuff where, like, basically if you lose a pick four, they're kicking back a significant percentage, and it's stuff that I was going to wager anyway. You know, if it's some track I'm not familiar with, I'm probably not going to play it. What do I know? But a lot of times it's already stuff I'm going to do, so, you know, maybe it might be if I switch from win betting to exacta betting, the deal kicks in. So, yeah, I do feel like there have been some it seems like there's a realization that the sport needs to compete on that front and make the basically what amounts to the takeout, all these, however you want to address it, those deals, that's one way of addressing it. And I think that's been good. Now for the industry, it's going to be a trying year on, you know, this model of can horse racing sustain this model where we're not only supporting purses and tracks, but we're also supporting the ADWs. That's going to be difficult, obviously, as that's pretty much where all the wagering has been coming from for several months now. And you have the, you know, from the horseman's perspective, which I very much can see, is most of the major ADWs now are owned by the tracks. So I think there has to be some understanding that there has to be a commitment coming from that. And I think that's what we're maybe going to see here as you talked about the announcement with NYRA and the New York Horsemen. So that's very good to see.
Well, let me get into before.
And to NYRA Bet's credit, they, you know, if you're betting on NYRA Racing, that counts as an on-track bet, which
yes.
I just really feel strongly that that's the way it should be. That I just think that's a terrific model.
Well, and especially, you know, for us, and we campaign New York Preds, and you know, from that perspective, everybody that is in that. You know, if you breed and race here, you have to be using NYRA bets. I mean, it's just it you know, you're helping your own cause by playing. I do want to ask Frank before I let you go too. You're one of the people that I've had, you know, long term visits with regarding the CAW and the computer models, and it continues to be not, you know, there's outward negatives associated, and then there's hidden negatives that people aren't even broadly discussing. And of course, the outward portion is these, you know, late odds changes and, you know, money pouring in the last few flashes and the frustration that, you know, that it creates and the image that it, you know, that it creates and you know, people convinced that, you know, money's coming in after the bell when it has to do.
I think that's especially tough when I think we do have it. I think we have new people giving us a chance. Yeah. And I think that's probably very hard for them to understand, especially if they're used to putting $200 to win on the Patriots at, 200 pays. Well, for the Patriots, it's probably going to be low. Maybe this year, 200 might pay back, might return 450, and that's not going to change. You know, that they are locked in, and whether Cam Newton, you know, comes off of injury or not, that's what they got, you know. So I think those are players that are used to a game that once they make their wager, that's it. They are locked in at those odds. So it's one thing to see them changing as it gets closer to the race. It's another thing to see them changing during the race, which We all know that the reasons for that. Most of the betting comes in just as they're going to post. But I think it's a tough spot. This would require industry cooperation. But just like one small thing that could be done to address that, and I still have a dozen other concerns about computer robotic wagering, but just on the odds change front, I just think if all the tracks could agree that you just have a countdown, you know, start at 60 seconds, and when it gets to zero, they're locked. And then at that point, they load. I think that could work. I mean, like, I remember Kentucky basically put that system in place. Well, guess what? Their handle went down because no other tracks had it in place.
Right.
So everybody was used to, you get to bet until the gates open, basically. Well, if one track, with one circuit goes off and changes that, people aren't going to adjust. And in fact, they might be betting in Oregon, and they're like, oh, yeah, Churchill, they stop, and then they get frustrated. But if the standard was the same everywhere, you know, I think that would be a lot better. And then in the 2 minutes that it takes to load the gate, your odds would really basically be what they should be at that point. They should be.
Well, we're also you're also opening the door and you know, making the case, and we've made this case for years regarding the fixed odds wagering system that, you know, has taken root in Australia and New Zealand with the Tab Corp, and you know we've got
has really worked well in Australia.
Yeah, very much, and it would go such a long way to helping new players, you know, not get, you know, flummoxed and confused, because I've told this story 100 times with Tina having, you know, come out of the Mutual Bay. There's no worse scenario than, you know, somebody fairly new having looked at the board, having made a bet and winning, and then going to the window to cash and not understanding that the horse's odds dropped from the time they bet.
It's very frustrating. I was very complimentary of the ADWs when I've been complimentary on them in this conversation on two things. But one thing I do think, I think there might be an opportunity there for ADWs who are not, they are making significant commitments to television and some nice promotions and stuff. I'm not saying that they're not doing anything, but when push comes to shove, they're not the ones that are putting on the show every day. And I really wonder if the ADW should step up here and overhaul the paramutual system. It's just not. It needs a redo.
Well,
and that could address a lot of this. And there's been a stop and start on this issue, as you know, Steve, 3 times in the last 20 years. And you know, last time I thought there was real progress made in that they were going to separate the information from the actual stuff that generates the money, you know, that handles the money, but then that slowed down, and it just came into, well, why don't we just get it to where we take the current technology and speed it up? And I don't think it's worked, quite frankly.
Well, I suppose that was a cue for me to send out a feature, a news feature from the Blood Horse by the long departed Tom Lamara. Called Frying Plan, and this dates back to September 9th, 2010, and involves Satish Sanan and what he was trying to do. And part of his plan that was inches from the goal line included a industry-wide ADW, and he essentially had all the elements lined up. In place, and the benefits were going to be just myriad. It was going to create, it essentially was, you know, going to create a tab style. You know, for those that aren't aware, you know, Australia has a, and New Zealand have a nationwide ADW platform, and you know, the idea would have generated, you know, because of, you know, the opportunity to, you know, limit the redundancies and so forth. It was going to have room for marketing monies. It was going to have generate revenue toward aftercare. I mean, there was just so many things. And after virtually everybody had said yes, then suddenly a couple of people decided that, gosh, if this is going to happen, I can do it. I can do this. And it literally, at the 11th hour, fell apart. And Tom explained all of that, going back to, I can't believe now, actually, I'm just pulling it up on a search. I can't believe it's 10 years. That shocks me. Ridiculous. And it didn't happen.
Even if you don't go to a single one, just an improved parimutuel system, you could improve the security, you could improve the timeliness of the information. If something comes up, I think the tracks would have a more immediate answer for any strange things that happen. And then beyond that, you could do so many different things. You could do a lot of different pools, and you'd be in, you know, like, for instance, Churchill Downs, to their credit, offers the Kentucky Derby future wager. Well, of course, largely because of the tote system, they're limited to 24 interest. Well, it's kind of fun, but it's not the same as going to Vegas when you can pick from basically any two-year-old, if it's that time of year, or three-year-old if they've turned three. And even if they don't have the horse on the board, they'll usually say, give me 10 minutes and I'll come back with odds. And you take them or leave them. I mean, you could do things like that with an improved tote system. Mm-hmm. I would be in favor of that.
Well, that and as Steve Crist, I you know what? I can go back and I can pull up. I've had all of these things, printed and in files for years on my shelves. And then when I went to Derby, I won't say she reorganized, but she's created a scenario where a lot of stuff was purged. But I can find all of it. As she says, you can find it, you know, it's on the internet. Well, so are all of Steve Crist's virtually annual missives about this topic, where he rightly points out you could assign a number, just like they do in Vegas, to every single three-year-old, every nominated three-year-old. And if you can punch up trifectas and pick sixes and all kinds of parlay bets, there's nothing preventing the algorithms to mutual for every horse.
You could do in-race betting.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't do it at small tracks, but if you're a major signal on a major day, you could do things like, you bet up till they're at the half pole. The sky's the limit, but we are, unfortunately, the sky's not the limit. The parimutuel system that hasn't been upgraded in way too many years is the limit.
Well, Frank,
I didn't know we were going to talk about this.
Neither did I. But whenever I get you on, because you and Matt are the go-to guys when it comes to these, and TD Thornton, when it comes to TDN. I mean, you guys are the hard business news correspondents, and reaching out to you guys and surveying on these topics is important.
It's fun to see. I mean, it's fun to just look ahead and see what opportunity is there, because I do think overall the tracks and the ADW companies this year have just done an amazing job and put the sport in a good spot when a lot of other sports have really,
really
taken it on the chin this year. So.
No doubt.
I don't want to sound too negative, because I do think there's a lot of positives this year.
Well, always positive to get opinions in from Frank Angst, from Bloodhorse, who you should be following, BH_F Angst. And we don't want there to be too much angst regarding the HHR, the historic horse racing. We hope hope that gets resolved the right way. Frank, great to connect, and I'll see you Breeders' Cup week.
Sounds good, Steve.
I appreciate it. Frank Angst, everybody, Blood Horse. And I'm going to send you that link. For those of you that have never read this piece that Lamera wrote, you're going to shake your head in disbelief that we could have been this close as an industry to this kind of just transformative concept. And it at the literally at the 11th hour. And it was funny because the part of it was the – you know, the important cogs in the conversation. Nobody thought that Satish could get the other parties to agree, and so Satish, who's about as savvy, you know, as they get, said, "If I can get Frank Stronach to agree, will you agree?" Well, if you can get Frank, yeah, I'll agree. And then, you know, he said to Robert Evans, said to Frank, if I can get Robert Evans and if I can get Naira, and he kept going around to everybody and he got everybody to say, all right, if you get him and if you get them. And the next thing you know, he had it. It was there. And, a couple of the parties that, seemingly had agreed, tried to do an end around, and it fell apart. And I am amazed it's 10 years ago. Bottom of the hour here, 90 minutes in, whistled by, and we got the second half yet. We got Haskin and Tony Black. I'm supposed to get a visit in from Seth, as well as Rich Eng. We missed Rich last week. We'll get some opinions about the racing today. I still want to go over, in fact, as you know what, Case, let's head to the break. And as we do that, I can fit in the a couple of things about yesterday. And most notably, took a swing at that pick five at Indiana. And what a nice return it ended up being. 34,000 to two players yesterday in that pick five. And there was a favorite, you know, won the first leg, that Abby's Destiny came through. And then it got tough. It got tough, but it was far from impossible. And winners of $15, $19.60, $19.40, and $17. I had three of the four within the body of selections, and putting the ticket together was the tough part. The horse that to me was really tough to come up with was Tony Granitz in the third leg, Positive Danger. That was a tough one, and I don't know how necessarily he was she was fifth choice. And there's actually a corollary to that horse that I'll come back to, but after the favorite, that Bayou Cat, and I tried to single Double Advantage, and I was a little... Double Advantage was awful. I mean, just awful as the even money favorite, the 6-5. Bayou Cat, who I made the second choice best value, wins and pays $15. So, you know, right away, there's some knockouts, and I'm sure I was not alone trying to single Double Advantage. Then Positive Danger, almost 9-1, pays $19.60 with Marcelino Pedroza. And our friend Ed Seltzer and Bev Anderson, that was their second win of the day with a homebred. They had won with RS2, that nice Delacour filly that hadn't run since the Fairground Oaks. They had won an allowance at Keeneland earlier in the day. So congratulations to Seltzer and Anderson, who, you know, breed a lot of horses and are wonderful. Always happy to see Seltzer and Anderson on the ownership line. Then Crafty Justice, there were a couple of scratches in that feature, or in the eighth, actually. It wasn't the feature, but Crafty Justice at almost 9-1 paid $19.40 and was, you know, was not impossible. Anyway, so I'm knocked out, and the nightcap, Helen Pitts. I wrote yesterday when I put up the selections, I was trying to get both Helen Pitts and Michelle Lovell to win races yesterday at square prices. Michelle's horse didn't run great. Chakra, however, for Helen Pitts and Cardinal Farm, wire to wire, and that's exactly what Malcolm Franklin needed to do, was get the lead with this Munnings filly, and she stood to wire that field going five on the grass, and she did. And so it made it a nice finish to the day, and certainly for the two players that collected 34,000. The pick four paid 6,200. Every afternoon at Indiana has been, you know, these sequences have been really fun and lucrative. So there you go. There's the coverage for the Wednesday action. We'll come back with Keeneland for you today, and we'll see about some opinions later with Rich Eng. Let's take the break. Bottom of the hour. We'll come back. We got Haskin, and then we'll get to Tony and more. Second half at the races after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.